There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast.
Oh yes, it's that time again. Hello and welcome. This is episode 155 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and anything you and your mob can do, David Cameron Walker, we can do it better. No, we're not bothered about being in the top three from October all the way through till May. We just casually time our arrival in the top three for 20 past four on the final afternoon of the season. Beautiful.
Congratulations.
How are you?
Well done. I am
enjoying Bury's promotion.
Yeah.
Staying positive.
Yeah, we'll get to how I'm feeling later on.
Can I just say...
mixed bag of emotions.
Can I just say, how do you like those apples, Phil? This is the best trip I've ever been on, Brown. Enjoy Southend away on Sunday. Enjoy Stevenage away on Sunday, mate. That's all I'll say. Nah, 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 nah. Bury's going up, going up. Come on,
Bury's going up.
I've just about come back down to earth after all that.
And you know what you should do?
What?
Sponsor a Morecambe player next season.
Well, it's funny you should say that. We need a bit of this.
In your smile, bring me laughter.
I thought I had to play a little bit of Morecambe and Wise. Just to pay tribute, Jim Bentley's Barmy Army. Can I just pay tribute to everyone in Morecambe? I'm holidaying exclusively there for the next decade.
I'm going to make sure you do.
After they basically
let's have
helped,
a weekend in Morecambe. Let's just go to Morecambe next season for a game. Why not?
Let's do
That's
it.
That's going to be our first live special. We've decided now. We're going to go to Morecambe.
Can I say, ever since we started this nonsense back in July 2011, 2012, Carl Swindon promoted. 2014, Jim's Leicester promoted. 2015, your Watford promoted. 2015, my Bury promoted. Topo's Nottingham. Oh no, don't worry about it. It's an incredible record.
It is not bad.
Incredible record. Right, let's get rid of Morecambe and Wise. Get rid of him. Okay, so I've got the full story from Saturday to share with you later in the show. I was there on the pitch at full time. You can actually see me as the goal goes in behind the goal if you get your sort of binoculars out.
How was it? How was it?
Oh, it was incredible. It was incredible. I was hugging random strangers, and I just remember the adrenaline rush when the final whistle blew. I was like three rows from the front. I just remember just sprinting, just diving over two rows, and just running with my hands in the air.
And that's how it should be. Because you had something to celebrate.
More on that later. It's what football is all about. Hopefully, staying a little bit more professional than me, though, up in the press box was Craig Nelson, the Bury Times reporter for the Bury Times. As you and Rookery Mike had your moment in the sun last week, Craig is going to come on and chat to me later about Bury getting promoted to League One. So we will save the rest of that discussion for later. We've also got plenty of other things to discuss, including... I'll whisper this, Bournemouth pipping Watford to the title. Also, Derby County, the meltdown. What the hell happened there? There's an Old Farm Derby in the playoff semi-finals to get excited about. We've got your man on the mobility scooter at Blackpool invading
Fantastic.
The pitch.
What a man
Steve
he is.
Steve Evans and his sombrero. We've got the Football League on Channel 5, plus relegations for Notts County, Crawley and Leighton Orient. But first, we are going to begin with the drama of Sunday afternoon in League One. One massive game at the Western Homes Community Stadium affecting both the top and bottom of the table. Colchester United against Preston. Now, last week on the podcast, DC, you confidently predicted that Watford would win the championship and that Preston would be promoted. It's therefore no surprise that
Bournemouth... I should have known better, really, shouldn't
Bournemouth
I,
won
I
the
suppose.
Championship and MK Dons were promoted.
Yeah.
The Dons took advantage of Preston's shot 1-0 defeat to clinch that automatic promotion place. And they'll be in the championship next season following their 5-1 5-1 mauling of Yeovil at Stadium MK in front of a massive crowd. They finished the season on 91 points after an incredible run of 9 wins from their last 10 games. It means Carl Robinson's men will be playing in the second tier next season, ending a run of 7 straight years in League One. Let's speak now to Toby Locke, who was there at Stadium MK on Sunday and has followed the Dons right throughout this incredible campaign. He is the sports editor of the MK Citizen and the Leighton Buzzard Observer. And I'm delighted to say that Toby joins us on the line right now. Toby, first of all, many congratulations. Can you start by describing what the atmosphere was like when the final whistle blew on Sunday afternoon?
I'd love to tell you, but I have absolutely no idea because it's all just such a blur. the whole second half, I think everybody in Stadium MK was just on tenterhooks. I mean, the game was pretty much done and dusted at 4-0. So I think that second half, everybody was just checking phones, Twitter, radios, everything. It was just so tense, and it was a really bizarre atmosphere for a football match, considering that everybody in there was there to watch a game, but was more occupied with watching a game that was going on 100 miles away. It was really strange, but absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome.
There have been some near misses in the playoffs over the past few years, but then we see like last season, a little, you know, it was kind of a step backwards as to where you may have thought they would have finished pre-season. So are you surprised, given your expectations before the season, that MK Dons have gone up, but gone up in such style?
Yes, I think surprise is absolutely the word for it. When we went into pre-season training, we were going down to the training camp quite regularly to talk to the new players, talk to the manager, and they were very reserved. Given the way that they ended last season, it was a damp squib by about February after they lost Patrick Bamford. So we really went into the season with no expectations at all. If we snuck into the playoffs, I think everybody would think, "Wow, that's a serious result given where they ended last season." But it started really well, and the recruitment over the summer seemed to be really good. And, you know, there was a buzz about the place. All of a sudden, there was an air of confidence, and, you know, they were just going out and having fun, and there was so much youth in the team, and they were so excited just to be playing football again. And it was great, and it's something that's lasted all the way through the season. So I think the dream for automatic promotion really came about. It was probably after the Manchester United game. I think there was a lot of thought of, wow, this team could go a long way. And then it got to September, October, November time, and you thought they're really in this fight.
It takes a lot for a 4-0 victory over Manchester United for a League One club not to be the highlight of the season in the end, doesn't it? I completely forgotten about that. But yeah, I mean, the last 2 months really is you know, it's where it's been won. This run of 9 wins from 10. You must have thought it maybe had gone when you were, I think they were beaten at home by Preston, weren't they? A while back, but since then they've just been unplayable, really.
Well, that's it. I mean, the defeat to Preston was Don's last defeat, and strangely enough, Preston's last defeat prior to the Colchester loss was on January 31st, and that was the same day Don's went top of the league. So there's a lot of numbers, and there's a lot of strange little statistics like that have floated around in the last few months. But yeah, I mean, this run since losing to Preston, they have, I think you said it, been unplayable. Unplayable. They've scored so many goals, and they've really taken teams apart, and they've put them to the sword. And that's something that Dons have lacked in previous years. You know, they absolutely pummel a team, particularly at Stadium MK, and will go in 1-0 up at the break. And this season, they've put that completely to bed, and going in 3-4-0 up at half time. And you know, the game's done and dusted, and they don't have to worry about the second half. And that's the approach they've taken, and just the sheer number of goals. I mean, if you go to Stadium MK, you're almost guaranteed 2 or 3 goals, which was really getting the fans excited.
Just looking at the team and the number of goals scored, there are 3 names that really jump out. Dele Alli, the young star who, you know, signed for Tottenham but was allowed to come back for the second half of the season, which was, I suppose, a key bit of business. Will Grigg, who's had a really good season in front of goal, and also the player of the season, Carl Baker, hasn't scored as many as those two, but I'm sure has been a creator as well. I mean, tell us about those 3 players and the impact they've had.
Well, I'll start with Carl Baker. I mean, like you say, he was player of the year. He was more shocked than anybody, I think, to pick up that award. He was really quite blown away being released by Coventry at the beginning of the season and coming in from relatively no man's land. It was a strange signing, but it was one that he's made work. He's been a firm fan's favourite since, you know, the very first time he came on the pitch. And he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's passionate. He's exciting to watch. He puts balls on a plate for every player that's out there, and he has been one of the key signings of the season. And I think that reflected in the fans awarding him the Player of the Year. Will Grigg, again, sensational. When he came in, everybody thought he'd be the man leading the line, but it was actually Ben Akafobi who really stole the headlines in the first part of the season because he was just banging him in for fun. But since Bennick left, he was sold to Wolves in January. Everybody thought the season would fall apart. But Griggy came on and he's just been the man. You know, he's been the man that you could ping balls into and he'll hold the ball up well and he's deadly in front of goal and he's been absolutely incredible. And, I've run out of words really to describe Dele. I've written about him for 2 years since he burst onto the scene. We always heard from Carl that there was this kid coming through called Dele, and that he was going to be the next shining star. He was going to be the next Steven Gerrard, the next big England international in central midfield. And he looks every part of it, every part of it. I mean, he ran the show against Manchester United, and he's everything that a Premier League team should want. And Tottenham have got a real gem, and at a bargain price as well.
Do you think he'll go back to Tottenham and feature for them next season, or is there a chance you maybe be able to have another season or half a season out of him in the Championship?
I don't think Bonds will get him again. I think if anything, they'll probably loan him to a lower end Premier League team to give him a chance to play a different style of football, get him in a big stadium with a big crowd again. Not saying that Stadium MK won't attract a big crowd next season, but I think he needs to learn to play maybe a different style of football, having grown up and, you know, he's only played football for 2 years professionally, really, particularly in the first team. So he needs to learn a different style of play. And I mean, well, if Tottenham want to gamble on him and put him straight into the first team, he won't look out of place. But no, I think he'll be loaned out to a lower-end Premier League team.
This promotion's obviously important for the club, but it's also been quite important for the manager as well, because it's amazing to think he's been there 5 years, really. I mean, if you were to look at the list of the managers of the 92 in England, he'd probably be one of the longest serving, Carl Robinson.
I think he's third on the list now, which is really bizarre.
Incredible. A fifth time of asking. He's finally got this promotion. He's been talked about as kind of the up-and-coming manager for quite a few years, but as you mentioned earlier, Dave, a couple of playoff failures and they've not quite managed to get over the line. So you feel this is quite an important thing for him personally as well?
I think he needed it, for his CV, if nothing else. It was certainly something that was playing on his mind. I've spoken to him pretty much every week for the 5 years he's been in charge. I think we started the jobs at similar times, so I've been there or thereabouts with him all the way through. And he needed it. He needed to get out. There have been plenty of offers for him. A lot of people seem to balk at the compensation when it comes down to it ultimately. But he has a passion for Milton Keynes, and he really loves it around here. His family are settled. He has a good time. He's just bought a new house. And it was hard to sort of see him looking away. But there was always that risk that somebody else might come in sniffing, and nobody has really made that big jump to pay up and say, right, we want Carl Robinson. I think it was because there's not that promotion on his CV. You know, Dons have sort of stagnated in League One, particularly at the end of last season. You thought, well, what does everybody see in him? But I think he's been so astute in the summer with the players he's brought in, the replacement players he's brought in for when Ben Akafobi left, when George Williams got injured as well. These are key moves. And to finally be in the Championship and to finally say I'm the manager of a Championship club, I think is massive. And, you know, if Dons don't do well next season, fully expect him to move on, because he'll be too hot a prospect to keep, I think, in Milton Keynes.
What do you think the immediate future holds in store for MK Dons? Because obviously it's been the ambition to get to the Championship for a number of years. You know, Pete Winkelmann is the other sort of key figure there at the club who's been working towards getting this, you know, getting this project off the ground when it started, and the circumstances around that are something for another day perhaps. But, you know, what's the potential? You know, do you think they can go to the Championship and flourish, or will it be a struggle?
I think for the first year or so, I think it will just be a battle to keep afloat. I think, and to be honest, I don't think that's a bad tactic to go into it with. I think you see a lot of teams try and go up there and try and swashbuckle their way through. And, you know, it works for some teams, but I think Dons have built a model where they try and do it financially right. They don't go out and just blow money. I think Carl's maybe spent, he's certainly spent less than $100,000, I'd imagine, in his 5 years at Dons. So they're not a club that goes out and spends willy-nilly. I think they need to go up. They need to find the right balance of youth and experience. They need to be, you know, perform well in the loan market. And I think just finishing in the top half, will be, in the bottom half, sorry, will be a really strong finish for them. after that, they can consolidate, find their feet a little bit, and then maybe mount something. But I think a couple of years in the Championship, finding their way before anything really can happen.
I am going to mention it now, actually, having said that. This it's a strange situation, because someone like Carl Robinson is quite a popular sort of character within the game, and he's got quite a lot of positive press around him. But make no mistake about it, this won't be a popular promotion for a lot of people watching the Football League and watching MK Dons go up. There is still a lot of lingering resentment around the very fact that the club exists. And with a promotion to the Championship, it becomes even more of the spotlight is shone on the club even more. They're only one league away from getting to the Premier League one day, and that would bring with it even more intense coverage. Does anyone care about that at MK Dons? Do the fans care about that? Or, is it still sort of always going to be there in the background?
It'll always be there in the background, but it's water off a duck's back to absolutely everybody at the club. They've adopted the name, the franchise. They love being called Plastic Fans. They love it. It's everything that gets thrown at them every week, and it's been thrown at them every week for 11 years. People in Milton Keynes don't care. They were dumped with a football team on their doorstep, and they went to go and watch them because they can't always go and watch their Premier League teams. And maybe they're not everybody's first team, but there's kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old who have known nothing other than Milton Keynes Dons being on their doorstep. So this generation of fans is now coming through. It's the club of the town now. So everybody who can throw all the mud all they want, but in Milton Keynes, it all just washes away.
I was going to say, because if you look at the pictures of the crowd, the pitch invasion and the shots of the crowd in the stands, there's a lot of young fans there in sort of replica MK Don shirts. I noticed in particular at the weekend, I saw the gate was 17,000. There was a lot of talk a few years ago about, how difficult it was to attract new fans to the club, but obviously promotion's only going to help that further, I would imagine.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And in Milton Keynes, we like to come out for an occasion. if there's something happening in town, we'll show out en masse. So, yeah, to see 17,000 at Stadium MK for what, it could have just been a run-of-the-mill end-of-the-season league game that could have been, on Thursday, we could all be going to the playoffs. But there was that sort of twinkle in the air, and everybody thought, well, what if something happens on Sunday? So it was great to see Stadium MK as full as it was. I mean, granted, there weren't many Yeovil fans willing to make the trip for what was ultimately a dead rubber for them, but no, it was brilliant. And those young fans, they're the ones that will bring the history to life again in a few years' time, when they'll be saying, oh yeah, we were there, do you remember that? And they'll be 15 or 16 now, they've been watching MK Dons for 10 years. These are the generation of fans that will remember all of this, and will be able to carry it on and pass it on to their kids in 10, 15, 20 years' time. And that's what Milton Keynes is, that's what the club is doing. They have to wait or get promoted. And, we'll get the casual fans through the door and they'll come and go, but that's the same with every club. So it's unfair to sort of tarnish Milton Keynes with that brush. But these young fans are what it's all about now.
Toby, thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy the Championship next season. Have a good summer. Thank you. That is Toby Locke, who is the sports editor of the MK Citizen and the Leighton Buzzard Observer. And you can follow Toby right now on Twitter, citizen_Toby is where you'll find him. Next, we are off to the Wirral to look back on another promotion party.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
So to the bit you've all been waiting for, the bit that I've been waiting for at least. It was a soggy old afternoon on Saturday down at Prenton Park. The weather sort of matched the mood of the home fans as Tranmere Rovers bowed out of the Football League after 94 years with a home game against promotion chasing Bury. The state of play was this before kickoff. As a reminder, Southend were 2 points ahead of Bury. They were away at Morecambe. Wickham were a point behind and they were away at Northampton. And at some point or other, Dave, during the afternoon, all three were in that third position. And it was one of those afternoons where
got any fingernails left?
It just twisted and turned and twisted and turned. But in the end, it was David Flitcroft's men who sealed it. Southend lost 3-1 at Morecambe. Wickham did score late to win at Northampton, but it wasn't enough as Tom Saw's magnificent toe poke edged them out. Bury won 1-0, their 8th away win in a row and their 13th win in their last 16, a run which has taken them to League One. Now, a man who wasn't getting drenched just behind the goal and invading the pitch like a lunatic like me was Craig Nelson. Craig is the Bury reporter for the Bury Times and the Bolton News, and I'm pleased to say he joins us right now. Craig, thank you very much for coming on the show.
That's all right.
I know that the club's been back financially, but first of all, just sum up this achievement for us, especially given where Bury were in the table just a few months ago.
Well, it's strange you should say about the financial backing. I mean, 2 years ago, they were due to go out of business. Apparently, there was a winding up order put in place for the club, and they were bought out of a very sticky situation by the current owner, Stuart Day. So with that in mind, to think that you can go from that to this in the space of two seasons is quite remarkable. But I suppose if a lot of other clubs are looking on at it, they're just seeing the money that Mr. Day has put into it and just putting two and two together. But as I think every Bury fan will know, it didn't quite work out that way as the season went on. And the fact that they've managed to go up in the fashion that they did was quite remarkable as well, considering where they were around sort of the end of December time as well, because they had a terrible sticky patch between being beaten 5-0 by Shrewsbury and really just not being able to buy a win or buy any points from anywhere during November. So for them to actually do it on the last day of the season was testament really to the changes that were made behind the scenes at the club as the season went on, and the character of the players that shone through in the end.
You mentioned changes behind the scenes there, Craig, but what about on the pitch? I mean, were there any changes in strategy, in team selection or new signings that really inspired this run of 13 wins out of 16, or was it just a case of sticking with it and persevering and believing in what they were doing?
No. I mean, they basically ripped it up and started again, which I think at the time, after that sort of big defeat against Shrewsbury, the manager, Derry Flitcroft, was really accused of possibly tinkering with his team just after that big, just reacting to that big defeat. And I myself included, really, just wondered where he was going with it, as a few different lone players came in and then left at quick exits. As he was trying to sort of find that kind of the winning formula, the balance between defence and attack, which he wasn't really quite getting it right. They couldn't win away from home. They couldn't get any points away from home during that spell, because he was playing quite an attacking formation. They started off the season with three defenders, four midfielders, and then kind of three forward-thinking players. So it was kind of like an old sort of Dutch system that they were using, that he'd kind of tried to use in League Two, and it just really wasn't working away from home. They were conceding too many goals and looked too fragile. So he ripped it up, started again, but slowly but surely they added to the defence. It didn't happen overnight. I think Adam Alabd was the first one to come in on loan from Bristol. Then he managed to get Joe Riley in from Bolton, and finally Nick Pope, the goalkeeper, on loan from Charlton. And as they all slotted together and the left-back Chris Hussey started to play the way that fans knew that he could, all of a sudden they had this amazingly sturdy, steady defence, and that provided the platform for everything that went after that. So they kind of changed from being a gung-ho attacking team to being miserly in the extreme, and that's really what it was all sort of based upon. That formula worked very well away from home, especially when they only had one striker in, with maybe Tom Soares just backing up a single striker, and they just kind of eked out the points, really, without dramatically casting any teams aside along the way. They kind of were winning 1-0, 2-0, so it made it very difficult for a reporter writing not to know what was happening until the last minute. But obviously as well, the fans were put through the mill as well.
I'm glad you've mentioned Nick Pope, because for me that is the turning point in the season, when he came in on loan from Charlton. Just to remind people, he was the goalkeeper. It was on loan at York last year when they had their record-breaking run of clean sheets. And he's come in the last eight games. You mentioned we couldn't buy an away win. Eight away wins in a row, seven clean sheets. That's in amazing. That run. And five of those eight wins were by one goal, as you've just mentioned.
Boring Bury, eh?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's not boring. It's just being solid. And that's what we were missing in that middle part of the season. And I suppose, despite the fact he got a lot of stick around the time, being branded by some fans as you called the Tinker Man, you've got to give Flitcroft credit, because he's you know, he saw and admitted his own weaknesses and he sorted it out.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament really to a good manager. I suppose that to be a brilliant manager is to not make those mistakes in the first place, but because he was actually shipping out players that he'd brought in. I don't know if you could call Jim McNulty being shipped out, the former captain, but he was kind of relegated a little bit to the sidelines for a while. Pablo Mills, who was a defender he'd brought in, also he left to go on loan at Cheltenham as well. So he's brought players in realised that maybe he wasn't quite right for what he wanted to do, and has looked and brought replacements in instead. And I mean, he had terrible troubles finding a goalkeeper, which a lot of fans actually were wondering, scratching their heads, why he released Brian Jensen, who obviously has performed relatively well at Crawley this season in League One. Last year, he was kind of the player of the season last year. So he's had a few detractors along the way, but I think what he's done is actually made the right decisions, or at least corrected any decisions he's got wrong. And that is a testament to a good manager, because you have to be able to admit when maybe you've not got things perfectly right.
A player that will have recently come to the wider attention of fans outside of Bury will be Danny Meyer, winning the League Two Player of the Season or Player of the Year. What's he like as a player? I mean, is he justifiable winner of the award, and do you think he'll continue to perform well in League One?
I mean, anyone that has seen him play, and I think it's there was a stat being bandied about when he actually won the League Two Player of the Season award for Football League, that basically he'd got every single top vote that he could from every other manager. And I had a word with the press officer at the Football League, and he said, no, that's not true. which was, I mean, it was a nice thing to think that every other manager has noticed the actual skills and the power and the way that, I guess, he was used as Bury's kind of go-to man. So whenever they had the ball going forward, he was the man that the ball went through. But I mean, to be honest, I think there were a number of different players that maybe had more of an impact on Bury's success. I think Nick Pope was one that was already mentioned. But I guess for me, the man that has really had the impact over the full season was the guy that ended up being the captain, Nathan Cameron. I think I'd probably pick him slightly ahead of Danny Meyer as the most influential player in the Bury team this season. Not because he's won matches single-handedly like at times Danny was able to do, but he was just there as a rock throughout, and he sort of created the style of play by being a defender that was able to do everything that he needed to do defensively, but also to be a calm head on the ball and get the attack started, really. And that's the way that Flitcroft wanted to play, from the back. So I'd say he had the most influence, but obviously Danny Meyer has got the headlines as the season has gone on.
I definitely echo that about Nathan Cameron. Some brilliant photos of him on the pitch after the full-time whistle on Saturday again. Absolutely mobbed. Craig, I've got to read this list of teams to you. Wigan, Blackpool, you're going to have potentially Preston, also Oldham, Rochdale, maybe Sheffield United, maybe Chesterfield, Bradford, Fleetwood, Barnsley, Doncaster, Scunthorpe, Port Vale, Crewe, Burton and Shrewsbury, not far away. It's basically the Northern League One next season, isn't it? And that makes it even more important that Bury have got up there.
It did. I mean, financially speaking, you'd imagine that it would help gate receipts, because obviously every football club is built on their away attendances rather than home attendances. They kind of know how many season ticket holders they'll have by the start of the season, but it's a number of away fans coming through the gates that really sort of helps them get through the lean times as they go through the season. And now, the chairman was definitely looking at that, and as a reporter I was definitely looking at that too, because I think the hard yards that all the fans have to go through to go up and down the country, League 2 did not look very appetising for next season. You talk about the Northern teams in League 1, but I mean the number of Southern teams in League 2, that's kind of the split, isn't it? So all these Southern teams have gone down or come up from the conference, and League 1 has been left as this kind of Northern league, which I think other than Peterborough, Gillingham and Colchester, it's pretty much Midlands and up, isn't it? So, yeah, absolutely dancing in the streets around my house. My wife and my family were more than happy that I won't be
slogging it down to Pompey every week.
On the M6 and M1 motorway throughout the season next year. But it's a big, big financial reward for a club that have really kind of actually put their... gambled really on going up as quickly as possible, and I think they've reaped that reward.
And you're going to be competing with those Northern teams for new signings and new players next season, and I suppose one thing that will be able to set Bury apart once you get past the obvious demands of wages is the fact that you've got the Carrington training ground, Manchester City's old training complex. That might be able to attract a player that otherwise may have gone elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy to think, isn't it, that the Bury were the only club in the vicinity that have acted on that, or are able to act on that, or were able to get the deal done, because you'd imagine that a lot of clubs would have been looking at that thinking, well, we'd quite fancy that. I mean, it's a Premier League facility, albeit Bury are having to try and figure out how they can run a Premier League facility on the sort of the amount of money that they've got. But it's still a pretty impressive thing to use as a carrot for players that might be interested in playing in League One. Not very many other clubs will be able to boast anything remotely getting towards that. So yeah, it's a big thing for the club. I'm not entirely sure exactly what kind of impact it will have, but I think if I was a player and I was offered X amount to play at one club and then a lesser amount to play at another club, but with those sorts of training facilities, you'd have to basically weigh that up, wouldn't you, and figure out what was most important to you.
Well, I can speak as a Watford fan, and a similar thing happened to us about... It was sort of just after the first time we got promoted to the Premier League under Graham Taylor. We took ownership of Arsenal's old training ground when they moved next door to an even better facility. And it's been mentioned countless times over the years, particularly with loan signings, that Premier League managers are happier to send their players to our club knowing that they're going to have good facilities during the week, which is obviously where they spend the most of their time. So it might also have, you know, benefit Barry in terms of the loan signings from a club like Man City, maybe.
Well, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you hear rumours about that already. Or, you know, you certainly do as a fan. You hear, oh, Nick Pope might be tempted to come back to us next season because of Carrington and things like that. I mean, Craig, I've got to ask you, 4 years ago, Barry got promoted at Chesterfield and sort of got promoted into League One. That only lasted two seasons and they were back down again. This does feel a bit different, though, doesn't it, this time?
Yeah, I wasn't lucky enough to be covering the last promotion. In fact, I actually started covering Bury the... I started sort of after the first season in League One. So I took over the second season in League One, and it just felt like everything unraveled from the moment I walked through the front door. I was going into the club that was in League One. I'd done pretty well under Richie Barker, and then the wheels fell off. And now it's been rebuilt. So I don't have the inside sort of knowledge to make a reference or make a comparison between the two, but what I would say is that that team pretty much was dismantled maybe over the summer before they even started in League One, and they did very well to stay in League One in the first season without much difficulty, really. So if you imagine that you've got a side comparable to that, that you can't really see falling to pieces or players leaving on a mass exodus, really, leaving the club, then yeah, they should be fine, shouldn't they? You'd imagine so if it worked out that way. But football is a funny business. You never know what's around the corner. So I think Bury fans are just enjoying the moment, really, and the rest of it will take care of itself a few months down the line.
Are there going to be significant funds available for David Flitcroft to strengthen his squad, or is it, you know, going to be scrapping around for loans and free transfers?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I'm not privileged to have that kind of information. And to be honest, I think... most fans have been quite surprised by the people that have come in League Two and the people that were able to attract to the team in League Two and the wages that it's understood they've been able to pay. Although I think that'll probably, those wages that people expect that have been paid maybe aren't quite as high as what people are thinking already. But with regards to attracting people in League One, I would suggest that if you look at the team that actually played against Tranmere on the final game of the season, well, try and pick out a player that isn't really capable of holding their own at League One out of that bunch. And there's not too many, really, are there? I mean, I couldn't go through the list myself and say they definitely won't be able to play at League One.
I wouldn't want to as well on just 2 days after a promotion.
No, but I really don't think you can do that. I think you look at those players and you think, well, they've got you that far, playing fantastic, you know, great football. If you were able to continue that form all the way through the season that they've had since Christmas, then you can't really see that the leap between League Two and League One is so big that they won't be able to at least do a job in the tier up. I'd say most of those players will still be in the team come August, really. And the only real sort of thing that they need to look at is strengthening, I guess, the bench, really. I think maybe attacking wise they've got to have players maybe that, you know, they've got Danny Nagiello and Ryan Lowe, who are obviously slightly older than the norm for League One for attacking wise so they'll have to supplement that side of the team, and that's obviously the difficult part, really, bringing in attackers that can score the goals. But with Hallam Hope and Danny Rose, they've got two young attackers that maybe, you know, this time isn't quite right for them. But you'd imagine that a good pre-season under the belt, maybe a bit more confidence as a result of a good pre-season, and things might be different.
And the youth team have done really well this season and won their league as well, so it's all looking good. And Craig, I mean, the main thing is we don't have to go all the way down to Plymouth on Saturday. That's just the thing.
Yeah, well,
I'm most glad
I'd
about.
Say that my family were dancing in the street. Well, it's my daughter's third birthday on League Two playoff final day. So there was a lot of people in my household who really don't care about football. With a lot, we're just chewing the fingernails down just the same way that the fans were in the ground. So it's happy days.
Craig, top man. Great to have you on as ever. Enjoy the summer.
That's all right, you too.
Talk to you soon. That's Craig Nelson, the Bury reporter for the Bury Times and the Bolton News. Next, we are going to round up what else went on over the weekend, and we're going to preview the playoffs.
You're listening to We Are Going Up. We've got the Football League covered.
Okay then, so much still to talk about from the final weekend of the season in all three divisions, but we should begin at the top of the Championship. AFC Bournemouth are the Championship champions. They had their big parade on May Day bank holiday earlier this week down on the south coast. Watford are the runners-up, and DC, you look like quite a frustrated man to me, despite the promotion to the Premier League.
I thought I'd gotten over it, but I watched the Football League show in preparation for this pod earlier on today, and it just brought all the emotions back again. Look, let me just preface what I'm about to say by the fact that I know that there are fans of 70 other clubs in the Football League who will be listening to this thinking, God, he should shut up, they've been promoted to the Premier League. I get that. We're up. It's brilliant. I'm delighted. It's what we would have taken if we were offered it at the start of the season. However, with one game remaining, all we had to do was beat Sheffield Wednesday and we would have been champions. Watford would have won the biggest trophy in their history. We'd never won that division before. You know, we've gone up through the playoffs. We've got promoted through the divisions in the 80s. But again, one of them was second to Luton Town when we went up to the top division in the 80s. And this was a huge opportunity for us to win the Football League Championship. And we blew it. We absolutely blew it. And no, those players have been fantastic all season, and maybe the celebrations in the week and at the weekend before took something out of them, I'm not sure. You know, they played really well in the first half, but they missed loads of chances, and then it just, you could just see the life was draining out of them in the second half. They were tired, and you could just see Sheffield Wednesday coming back into it. And then, with about 15, 20 minutes to go, like, our fans, some of our fans, I mean, there was a lot of brilliant, our fans in general are brilliant, they have been brilliant this season, but there were people in that ground. Some of them decided to start a Mexican wave. What are you doing? Why are you starting a Mexican wave? This isn't a gig at the bloody O2. This is your team needs you to support them on when they just desperately need one more goal to secure the championship title, and you're doing a bloody Mexican wave. And there's people there that just, I got the impression that no matter what happened, they just wanted to be on that pitch. They wanted to be part of it. They wanted to have that moment where they could go onto the pitch and take a selfie, you know, in front of the goal, or run up to one of the players and get one of them on his shoulders, or take Troy Deeney's boots or something. They wanted to have that moment that we had 2 years ago when Deeney scored against Leicester. That pitch invasion was entirely justified because that was a miraculous moment that will never be replicated. This was not worthy of a pitch invasion. Daniel Tozer was trying to take a corner the minute after we conceded in the last minute. A corner that, if executed correctly, could have got us the title. We could have got the goal that we needed. And he couldn't take the corner properly because there was loads of cretins 1 foot away from the touchline, not letting him take his run up. He had to physically push our own fans back because they were so desperate to get onto the pitch even after we conceded. Just the whole atmosphere of the day. I was worried from the start. You got Clem interviewing Troy
Deeney
before the game and interviewing Jokanovic in the tunnel. Let him concentrate on the game, for Christ's sake. Everyone, even the programme, it said, we're promoted now for the title. It was just, you know, hubris completely did us. And it was, I was furious at the final whistle, and not as furious, I might add, as Rookery Mike, who was with us last week. He went mad, kicking the seats next to me. And it didn't feel like a celebration. I didn't want to run on the pitch. I didn't want to wait to see the players do their lap of honour. I don't think the players wanted to come back out because we failed. We failed to win the title, and they should have won that title, and they would have been worthy champions. But as it happened, poor defending in the last minute. They got a point. They should have won. And, you know, we finished second, which is brilliant. But I can't deny the fact that there was an emptiness in the pit of my stomach at the final whistle on Saturday. And I am annoyed that that glorious moment, for whatever reason, all of these factors combined, meant it didn't happen.
And breathe. and breathe. I know, I completely get what you're saying. And I think every football club has a minority of fans that do like to.
And I didn't even mention the flare on the, they threw flares onto the pitch. Yeah. These yellow smoke flares onto the pitch with 10 minutes to go.
During the game.
Yeah, during the game.
Yeah, that's...
What are you doing? Why are you doing that? Because our fans have been brilliant this season. Absolutely fantastic. The 1881 group, who was the singing section, they started like a little mosaic thing for the World War One centenary. They did another one the other day. The whole for Nick Cruz for promotion thing. Our fans have been fantastic this season, and they'll continue to be so. But just a couple of idiots, just they let the atmosphere get the better of them.
Get some sunshine in. You have a nice break over the summer. Come back in August when you're playing Arsenal at home on the first day, and I reckon you'll be all right. That's all yeah. I'm going to say.
And then they beat us 4-0.
When you don't have to go to whoever it's going to be. You got promoted from League One. You know, MK Dons away. Yeah. You're going to be playing at the Emirates or something. Or Anfield. I'm sure you'll get over it. Well done to Bournemouth. They are the champions. I mean, two more from Matt Ritchie. That first goal, just come on. He's just so good, isn't it? What a strike that was on his left foot into the far corner. Exceptional player. Well done to Bournemouth. They are, well, obviously worthy champions looking at the table at the end of the day.
You can't disagree. They got more points at the end of the day. They did what they needed to do on the day.
What was your Jukanovic chant that you told me about yesterday?
Da, 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 da,
I like this.
La, la, la. Oi, oi.
To Amarillo.
La, 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 la. Slavisa Jokanović.
Brilliant, I love that. Mate, it could be worse. You could be a Derby fan.
True.
Oh God. Derby County, right? 13 games to go. Back at the end of February, they were top of the league by 2 points. They were 3 points clear of third. They were 7 points clear of seventh. 13 games later, they finished eighth. 13 points off the top. They won two out of their last 13.
It's appalling.
They lost five and drew six.
And what a way to lose as well on the final
day.
They
haven't been out of the top six since September. They only needed a draw at home to a Reading, who were awful and had just lost at Rotherham in midweek. And they got beaten 3-0.
I mean, that first goal.
It just set the tone, didn't it?
The pass, back pass from Will Hughes. The defender didn't get there. And then the other defender who was covering completely sold himself. Yeah. But the first, he wasn't even that much of a sort of fainter shot from the Reading attacker. And he just completely slides, takes himself out of the game. Simple goal for Reading. 1-0 up, 2 minutes in. The tone has been set.
Darren Bent missed a penalty as well.
He did.
Great
normally
save by Federici.
From the spot.
Great save by Federici, obviously a few weeks after his big error at Wembley. And then all kinds of headlines now. Obviously 3-0 defeat, terrible result, completely bottled it. Awful end to the season, and a season was promising so much. They've done me over in my accumulators. I'm sure they have a lot of people listening to this. And now there's rumours about McLaren and Newcastle. Apparently he's not going to go.
Well, yeah, but it looks like he's going to stay.
It's just
although there's been no
real disappointing end to the
that,
season,
I don't think. But yeah, it looks like he obviously feels embarrassed, I suppose, about the end of the season, and he knows that the team should have done better and shouldn't have finished. Certainly shouldn't have finished outside the top six, let alone the top two. And looks like. At the moment, he wants to stay and try and put things right next season, which will be a challenge. It'll be a task to raise the players and go again after a second successive.
I know.
You know, even at least last season, they can say, look, we're unlucky, lads. You played really well at Wembley. It just didn't go for us on the day. This season, you let us down big time. And the ones that are going to be there next season, and any new ones that come in, are going to have to improve.
Do you remember that game last season where Bristol Rovers needed a draw against Mansfield to stay up on the last day of the season? Mm. When you need to draw against a team with nothing to play for, it's a very similar thing in a way. Obviously, they're not got relegated from the league. But
although when it's that thing, oh, we only need a draw, lads, it's better if you know that, look, win and that's it, go for it. Because if you need a draw, sometimes, I don't know whether it just plays psychologically in the players' minds that, you know, they've got an eye on the other results as well, you know?
Wolves also missed out on the playoffs. They've had a great first season, though, haven't they, after promotion under Kenny Jackett?
Absolutely.
They finished above Derby in the end, finished seventh. They beat Millwall 4-2. Great edits, by the way, on the Football League show the last day of the season,
really
the way
good,
they sort of mashed all the games together, really sort of told the story of the afternoon.
That second goal by Dicko, what a finish
fantastic,
that was. Tremendous.
Fantastic goal.
He's had a decent season, and Sacco is the other player that I've admired for many seasons now, and I am surprised in some ways that they managed to keep hold of him all through their trials and tribulations up and down the leagues. But again, I think he's a player that will be linked with moves away in the summer, and he may well stay next season and have another good season in the Championship. But I think it's key that they obviously keep their best players, and they should have the finances and the resources to add more quality to that squad. And as Kenny Jackett said at the end of the game in his interview, it's about building. And I think I've already said this before, that I would tip Wolves to be really strong next season, and, you know, similar to Bournemouth last season, just missed out on the playoffs, but I could see them being right at the top of the league next year.
Playoffs then. Ipswich confirmed their spot despite losing 3-2 at Blackburn. Norwich beat Fulham 4-2. Middlesbrough drew 0-0 with Brighton, but Brentford have made the playoffs. What a season they have had.
Amazing.
3-0 victory against Wigan. And they go into a semi-final against Middlesbrough. Mark Warburton could still pull this off, promotion to the Premier League, and then out the back door.
Well, who'd back against it, really? Because all of the controversy surrounding Mark Warburton and his future, and then it did eventually transpire when none of us thought, surely we thought that can't be true, and it turned out that Matthew Benham did want to get rid of him and had told him that this is it, no matter what happens. I mean, it's exactly what we said when we did the special on it. I mean, it would be typical of football that they end up going up, and then it looks ridiculous that Warburton ends up leaving. Where does he go? Does he find himself a Leeds manager next season, or another job in the Championship, and Brentford, his team, are in the Premier League? If they go up, I don't think Benham, what we know about him, will buckle to any pressure, but surely there will be some intense pressure from the fans and the media on Brentford to keep Mark Warburton and
definitely
give him a reprieve.
What do you make of the semi-finals then? Brentford are playing Middlesbrough, so we've not really talked about this, but if we are going to do a show next week, then the first legs will have been played just of these, or if we're going to leave it 2 weeks, then maybe we could talk about the ties as a whole. But Brentford,
let's sort our admin out off air. Okay. I'd say
Brentford Middlesbrough Friday night 7:45, Ipswich Norwich Saturday lunchtime 12:15. If you want the league results from the regular season, in the league games, Middlesbrough won 1-0 at Brentford, and they beat them 4-0 at home, so they did the double over Brentford, and Norwich did the double over Ipswich. They won 2-0 at home and 1-0 away.
Interesting. I'd certainly back Norwich over two matches to beat Ipswich. As impressive as Ipswich have been, even at, you know, times when it's looked like they've been slipping out, they've come back with you know, real character. I think we've got to applaud the season that Daryl Murphy's had. He had a few injuries and he had a little bit of a dry spell in the last sort of third of the season, but he's ended the season strongly, scoring goals. What a fantastic goal that was, the first one against Blackburn, and then absolutely slamming that penalty home. So they'll be looking to him to continue scoring to get them through. But I just think over two matches, I think Norwich have more firepower, more quality, and I would back them to get through. But, you know, it's two local derbies. I mean, they're going to be intense, even more intense than they normally are, considering their playoffs. So anything could happen, and I just hope they're great games. I'm really excited to see them.
Two ludicrous items to end the Championship for the regular season. Steve Evans and his sombrero before the game. I mean, just words cannot. Yeah, I mean, you can't really find the words, can you? And then Blackpool against Huddersfield, match abandoned. More stories coming out of Blackpool in the last week with the Stan Mortensen statue being taken down because the fans were planning to demonstrate their legendary ex-player for England, of course.
Well, that worked, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the fans decided, right, have you taken that away? We're just going to protest in the middle of the game. Match abandoned, man on his mobility scooter in the middle, going around the pitch. The Football League has said,
superb. What can the steward do?
They don't need to replay the game. I'm not really sure how the points get allocated there, but if anything sums up Blackpool season, that is it.
It is. It's a sorry end to what has been an absolutely sorry campaign and has been a sorry few years. And as we've said countless times this season, what's the end game? Where does it end? Carl Oyston and the Oyston family quite clearly don't want to go anywhere, and are very staunch in their views that they're doing is the right way to run the football club. The fans obviously think exactly the opposite, and there's no winner. The only loser is the football club and the team and the fans, really, because what are they going to do next season? What chance has Lee Clark got? It wouldn't surprise me if you're in a situation like they were again at the start of last season, where they barely got any players. I mean, it's an utter farce, and something needs to be done. But I mean, what can the Football League step in? Well, I don't know if they can. Is there any grounds to? I mean, that's one of the problems, I suppose, you have when you have someone who owns a football club like they have done for so long. What can you do if they're not actually breaking any rules and they're just, you know, not spending any money on the club? There's not much they can probably do, but it's a shambles, and it's a shame for the fans.
League One then. We talked about Derby bottling it. What about Preston? They were second in the league for the previous 13 games. They last failed to score back on the 4th of November, 30 games ago. They lost 1-0 at Colchester. We'll talk about it from a Colchester perspective and the fact they stayed up in a second, but
This was a really good game, I thought. I know it was a lot riding on it. Loads of chances for Preston, though. I mean, Jermaine Beckford had one where maybe he could have got his shot away. Tom Eastman slid in. And Paul Gallagher skied one, which bobbled on the edge of the box. And then the chance was for Garner with a header. Mm-hmm. Well, he should have gone back across the goalkeeper, but he tried to head into the corner to his left and he just got it horribly wrong.
Well, three big players for Preston there who have all played at higher levels, have all got good goal-scoring records, and all three of them wasted the chances they had. And that is what it comes down to on days like this. You've got to be decisive. You've got to take your chances. MK Dons took all of theirs and more, and Preston didn't take any of theirs and then conceded a poor goal to Colchester. And it's... they should never have lost that game. They should have beaten Colchester because they are a better team and they've been very good this season. And one thing that I did like about the game was listening back to the commentary on the Football League show. So I think it was probably done after the event, maybe not live. And that chance for Garner, the cross gets put in and because it hit the sort of...
Oh, yeah,
the bit,
yeah,
and he went,
I know what you mean.
And
it's...
in the side netting.
he was really gearing it up, wasn't he?
He thought it was the big game.
His voice actually shrieked a little bit when he because he just saw the ball sort of rustle the net and he thought, it's it. Oh no, it's just gone wide. Just gone wide.
But and the last 5 minutes, especially once Colchester had scored and Preston obviously knew, right, we've got 5 minutes to get back in this game and try and do something. It was terrible. A terrible attempt to try and chase the match. Every throw in that they had went straight to Colchester players, every long ball, like crosses were, just, obviously they were panicking, but it was really poor. Like they'd lost it completely.
9 previous playoff campaigns Preston North End have been in, 0 promotions. 10th time lucky.
Well, they're going to need Garner to be on form like he was last season in the playoffs when he scored that goal.
They got Chesterfield in the semi-final.
Actually won the goal of the year just against Rotherham a few weeks ago, didn't it? And what a goal that was. So they're going to need to step up. And on paper, really, I know they failed last season as well, but the overall record of the playoffs, and you know, David Moyes' playoff teams and all that years ago, what's that got to do with anything now, really? They've got to put that out of their mind. You know, psychologically, they've got to just concentrate on this, on these games, if there is more than one, and think that we have been really good this season.
Well, there's definitely more than one, mate.
No, I mean more than one set of matches.
Oh, right,
if they get through to the final. So they have to try and believe and say, look, we didn't quite do it on the last day, but we deserve to be promoted this season, because how many points are they ahead of... whoever's in of Chesterfield?
It's 20.
Look at that. Mm. They're better than them and they've got to prove it.
Chesterfield only in the first season up in League One as well. They've had a great season. The other semi-final is Sheffield United against Swindon. So the first legs of those are on Thursday, and then the return legs are Sunday and Monday. So by next week we will know who is going to be going to Wembley. Care to offer a prediction? I'm going to go for a Preston against Swindon final.
I mean, Carl, this is probably music to Carl's ears, actually. I, for some reason, I don't fancy Swindon.
Right.
Swindon fans.
Get your money on everyone.
Put your train tickets to Wembley. But yeah, I'd say Preston-Sheffield United final and the two playoff bottlers.
Yeah. Is it possible for them both to lose in that situation?
It's an ever-ending penalty shootout, I imagine.
Down at the bottom then, it was, well, an incredible sort of day down there as well with, I think it was, what, 6 teams trying to stay up? 3 places still to be decided. The 3 that survived are Crewe, not really anything sort of to do with their own performance. They lost 1-0 at home to Bradford. They only won one of the last 7 games, so they can count themselves a bit lucky.
Bradford have had as well, by the way.
Crewe had a terrible first half of the season. They had a really good patch in the middle, which kind of got them just above water, and they've just about sort of, you know, hung on. So Crewe have survived. Colchester, as we mentioned, Chris Porter's terrible penalty thankfully didn't matter.
Well, he redeemed himself, though.
He did. Nice bit.
Very good hold-up play and lay-off for the goal.
Tony Hume's men, this is their last 10 games. They won 5, drew 3 and only lost 2. So that was a great end to the season. They looked dead and buried. Pulled themselves out of it. Colchester will be in League One next season. And the other team to survive were Coventry. So Tony Mowbray just about got the job done there. They won 2-1 at Crawley. The 3 teams that go down... DC were Crawley, Notts County and Orient. Crawley lost 2-1 at home to Coventry. Matthias Pogba scored for them in that game, the brother of Paul. But then they shipped 2 goals and been relegated after 3 seasons.
Paul, what are you doing? What are you doing on Sunday? You just come... He's injured, isn't he, for your Bennett at the moment? Just try to get him over.
Pop down to the
Well, I don't know why they're great.
It's been a while. We have to come and catch up.
Broadfield Stadium. Dean Saunders looked devastated. He's not sure if he'll be there next season because, of course, he was just sitting in for John Gregory.
He didn't stand up for it, did he, at the end of the game?
Just been relegated, to be fair, mate. And the other two, Notts County, I mean, this is ridiculous. They were 1-0 up at Gillingham with 2 minutes to go. They were staying up, and then they somehow lost 3-1.
Yeah, really poor.
I don't understand how that happened. Their five-year spell in League One is over. Whether Ricardo Moniz will be there in League Two next season should be interesting. And... well, Leighton Orient, a year on from Wembley, mate. Penalty kicks away from the Championship. Maybe a top two budget this season, all the signings they made.
What a disaster.
And they're finishing the bottom two, and they are down.
I mean, absolute
and
shambles.
Liverani, 8 wins from 27 in charge.
He's
mess.
Obviously,
a mess.
You know, he was obviously never good enough. Like, it's a ridiculous gamble to put that man in charge of that team. A ludicrous decision. There was no justification, no prior evidence that that man could be a successful football manager. Maybe he will one day, but I think this was too much too soon for him. You know, there's been a lot of investment there by the new owners and in the infrastructure and in the playing staff, and to be relegated in the first season is a disaster. And I'm sure they'll probably have a decent chance of bouncing back next season if they manage to sign some new players or keep some of the higher wage earners there on the wage bill. But, you know, it's a desperate situation and they can't afford to mess around. Look at Tranmere.
Well, indeed, more on that in a second. Darren Kelly is the new Oldham manager. That's been announced today. He's currently on the academy and coach staff at Sunderland. He'll take over in July. A couple more bits from League One. Big scores are back. Barnsley 5, Rochdale 0. Doncaster 5, Scunthorpe 2. And if we talked about the Blackpool situation summing up their season, how about Bristol City 8, Walsall 2, a hat-trick from Aidan Flint, who's a centre-half, and
outrageous.
He scored 15 goals this season.
Fantastic.
Steve Bruce-esque.
Very much so.
Unbelievable end to the season for Bristol City, who paraded
Sean,
the trophy.
My housemate was there.
Oh, was he?
And yeah, at the weekend. And it was 2-2, wasn't it, at one stage? Yeah.
What a season for the three of us. Do you remember last summer we did the one day where during the World Cup where we went to visit a place in London, an establishment for each nation in the World Cup? The three of us, little did we know a year on, three promotions under our belt.
We should have lumped on, really.
We should have done.
We should have thought about that. Actually, I did.
Oh, did you?
I actually did lump on.
You did lump on. You've
Watford,
won.
Bristol City and Bury.
You've won. Okay, League Two then. So my day out at Tranmere, there was a brilliant moment after the game where I was drinking with David Nugent's dad.
Really? What's his name?
I'm not sure, Mr. Nugent. I just think. Which is just a bizarre situation where I was in the pub and the lads were going, oh, Dave Nugent's dad's over there. So he is. All right. Yeah, had a nice chat. I think it's Dave Nugent's birthday. I think he's back in Liverpool. He's a Scouser. Yeah. He was very happy for Bury. Great moment during the game where the third goal for Morecambe went in and it was 3-1. And obviously, there's just, you know what it's like.
Yeah,
all going off around you. And then all the Bury fans were singing in unison, one goal. We only need one goal. And then 2 minutes later, the only bit of good play in the match, terrible game of football. It's absolutely chucking it down. Horrible day. Rubbish game. We were awful. One bit of good play between Mayer and Hussey on the left. Ball gets pulled back for Tom Soares. And then he tries to hit it. It just kind of bobbles in front of him. And then he's there, like, sort of 7 yards out. The greatest toe poke you've ever seen into the net. I was 3 rows behind it. And if you watch it on the Football League show, on the same row as me, I've got my mate who's in an orange waterproof jacket, which we gave him stick for at the time, but looking back, thank God he was, because we can see where we are. And I've got another mate who's in a blue jacket, and just to the left of them is me with my hood up because it was chucking it down, just going stupid crazy. And then the full-time whistle goes, and like I said earlier, just sprint on the pitch, dancing on the pitch. And then the saddest thing for me is I thought the players were going to come back out because they all disappeared down the tunnel. And because of Tranmere's relegation, the club decided that they weren't going to sort of flaunt the promotion if we went up. So they said, get back to the ground. We went on the train, so it took us a while to get back. So by the time we got back, we missed the players on the pitch at the ground. Ugh. So it was a slight disappointment in terms of that. But hey, who cares? We're in League One next season and it's done and dusted. Southend are not, though, and they go into a playoff semi-final against Stevenage after they lost 3-1 at Morecambe. And Wickham won 3-2 at Northampton. They go into a semi-final when they'll be playing Plymouth.
And
care to offer a prediction for those?
Well, I mean, just looking at Wickham, I mean, they've been up there all season, so we've kind of got used to it. But we shouldn't forget, this time last year, we were talking about them surviving on the last day of the season after very nearly going out of the Football League. So hats off to Gareth Ainsworth, because he's done a wonderful job this season. And even if they don't go up, fantastic season they've had. But, you know, but they'll be as confident as any of the other teams, really. I'd say none of them are flying. Southend, I suppose, have got the best record over the last few months. But I think I see it as pretty even.
So the first leg is Saturday night, Plymouth-Wickham, 7:45. And the first leg, Stevenage-Southend, 6:35. On Sunday. Well done to Burton Albion, who won the title with a 3-2 win at Cambridge. Shrewsbury finishing second, of course. Few more bits from League Two. One more bit from League Two. Ian Gayle of Dagenham, the worst piece of defending you've seen in the Football League this season against Exeter. You've got to check that out.
I suppose you could kind of applaud them for trying to play their way out the back.
But when the goalkeeper's to the right of the goal, you're facing your goal on the edge of the box, and there's a striker between you and the goal. Don't play into the middle of the goal. That's just one rule of defending.
It wasn't great.
And another thing you wanted to mention, which I have noticed as well, is when teams get promoted, they have these banners.
Yes.
Which they hold.
I think it's deliberate.
Now, what's the chant, right? The chant is, we are going up.
So we are going up.
Hence the name of this podcast when we came up with this. We are going up. Not we are going up.
Yeah.
What is that?
Abbreviating it. We're going up.
It doesn't work.
So
get rid of the apostrophe Football League and make that two words on your little banners that you Sky Bet. You make the players hold up. We are going up.
Yes.
Not we're going up.
We're not changing the name of the podcast.
We're both picky, aren't we? And one more thing to mention. It's just been confirmed on the day we're recording this that Football League highlights are moving to Channel 5 next season. They'll be on
Saturday
at 9 p.m.
Channel 5.
If Watford are doing well next season and you're playing, I don't know, Hull at home and they're bottom of the league, are you going to sing that to them when they're about to get relegated?
I hope so.
Saturday night, Channel 5.
It might be the other way around.
If you go back, we did a show on this at the start of the year, I think.
December,
was it? Okay, so end of last year. So this news is kind of old hat.
Biggs, our friend Alan Biggs, was the man that broke it.
He was. Alan Biggs.
He was in the know long before anyone else.
If you want our opinions on that and the big move to Channel 5, go back, listen back to that show if you're a new listener, because we talked about it for a good half hour.
Did you read the press release?
I scanned it.
They've installed some sort of
HD
super
cameras,
super fast Wi-Fi broadband optic cables at all the ground so they can whiz the highlights up the wires and get it done quickly.
Well, I think that's why on Sky recently they've been showing like Football League goals as they go in on Soccer Saturday and stuff in the Championship, because those grounds have got that technology. Yeah. But it's a bit harder at Accrington to get that, take the Very goals to so. London.
But they're all going to have it.
Well, yeah.
All 72
clubs. Not much of a turnaround there, is there? What, 4 hours to get the show on the air? Interesting to see who hosts it and all that kind of thing. I did enjoy Manish's tweet earlier when he said, "So where's that CV? ? Something like that he put on Twitter. Right, that is pretty much it for
Imagine
this
the uproar if it's Steve Claridge and Manish again. Mate, you know there'll be people complaining,
Clem will be back.
Won't they?
Clem will be back.
Of course he will.
He's going nowhere. Let me tell you that. The Twitter is at Wagyu Podcast. The website's wearegoingup.co.uk for all the archive on there. Facebook.com/Wagyu Podcast and Instagram as well. Instagram.com/Wagyu Podcast. And you can download a free audiobook, audible.co.uk/going up. Right now, sign up for a free 30-day trial. You can download any audiobook that you would like for nothing. Well, we can enjoy the playoffs.
I signed up for the football pools, by the way, last week.
Yeah. How did you get on?
Yeah, nothing.
No.
I didn't realise. You've got to get score draws, haven't you?
Yeah.
There was hardly any.
Yeah. We can take this up with them over the summer, can't we? We can enjoy the playoffs this year.
I'm really looking forward to the playoffs. They are fantastic games. There's always drama. They're always late winners or disasters, collapses from teams. I've just saw some of that when Football League Show did the montage at the end of the Saturday show. Just some of the goals from last year. Ravel's at for Rotherham at Wembley.
Garner.
And tremendous. Yeah, so I can't wait for the playoffs. They're going to be great. And I suppose I wish... Obviously, they can't all win. There's going to be more losers than winners across the three divisions. But good luck to all the teams and fans involved. Just try and enjoy it.
Indeed. We should say thank you as well to everyone who did sort of tweet us both and just say, well done on your teams being promoted this season. So thanks to everyone who's kind of... I suppose when you listen to a podcast and you hear us bang on about the same two teams, you do kind of look out for their results in a little way. I hope so, anyway. That's it. Good luck in the playoffs, everyone. We will speak to you next time on We Are Going Up.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We've got the Football League covered.